And 2 years to the day since Hurricane Katrina devastated the Gulf Coast, President Bush today reassured the people of New Orleans.
A lot of people down here probably wondered whether or not those of us in the federal government not from Louisiana would pay attention to Louisiana or Mississippi. In other words, it's one thing to come and give a speech in Jackson Square. It's another thing to keep paying attention to whether or not progress is being made. And I hope people understand we do. We're still paying attention. We understand.
President Bush speaking in New Orleans this morning. In a recent op-ed in the Washington Post entitled Reckless Abandonment, Douglas Brinkley argued that the president has in fact decided to abandon parts of the city, but won't say so, at least not in public, that New Orleans and the state of Louisiana are poorly served by their politicians, and that the country faces hard choices. How much do we rebuild? At what cost should the lowest areas be rebuilt at all? We'd like to hear from you on those questions. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Douglas Brinkley is a history professor at Rice University, author of the book The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. He joins us today from the studios of the Baker Institute at Rice University in Houston, Texas. And it's nice to have you on the program again.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I wonder if you heard anything from President Bush this morning that might change your mind.
No, I watched him very carefully and listened to him, and it was just a PR trip, his 15th to New Orleans, just trying to tell people on the second anniversary that he cares. But the policies of inaction, the fact that 2 years since Katrina, we're still looking at a city, and particularly in the below sea level neighborhoods that are in ghastly disrepair and ruin. There's block upon block where nobody can move back. And the Bush policy has been to disingenuously, in my opinion, tell people, the people that are trying to get back to New Orleans, come on back, move back to the lower Ninth Ward, move back to New Orleans East. But how can you go back when you go to those neighborhoods and there's no electricity, no water, no sewage, school systems in disarray, medical services are almost non-existent? So to say just come back when you don't see the federal government helping these poor below sea level neighborhoods is, I think, it means that President Bush actually has a policy of inaction.
Mm-hmm. Why, you ask in your article, why is no Herculean cleanup effort underway? Why hasn't the president named a high-profile czar such as Colin Powell or James Baker to oversee the ongoing disaster? Where is the U.S. government's participation in the rebuilding? And you've come to the conclusion that they've determined that parts of the city should not be rebuilt and are trying to enact that policy through inaction, by not making decisions.
Exactly. The big model for the Bush administration, it was Galveston in 1900. It's a Texas model. Galveston back in 1900, when about 10,000 people were killed by the great hurricane, they decided to get out of Galveston, away from the water's edge, and move inland to Houston. Today, Houston's the fourth largest city in the United States and the capital of the Gulf South. That's the feeling that the Bush administration has to New Orleans. There's only one Fortune 500 company weathering it in town, Entergy, and so there's not private sector money. New Orleans is based on an economy of two sources, generally speaking. The port business, which the Bush administration's done a good job of securing through Homeland Security. Port business is back to about 90% of pre-Katrina levels. Tourism, which is hurting. But the port and tourism are along the Mississippi River, and those are the levees that didn't breach. That's the above sea level part of New Orleans. We call it the sliver by the river. What the Bush administration wants to do is keep that part going, but abandon the below sea level neighborhoods. And it's a policy of attrition. And what I object to is that it puts the burden on not only on the victim of the storm, but it's being disingenuous. If the Bush administration does not want to rebuild in, say, New Orleans East or the Lower Ninth because they don't feel the levees are safe there, or they don't feel with wetlands erosion that it's a good idea, then they need to be blunt. They need to say it. That's what leadership is all about. Instead, we're getting a lot of shell games, sleight of hand, money's appropriated, money's not spent. And it's not me saying this. Anybody in the national media can go walk in the below sea level neighborhoods of New Orleans and recognize that very little has been done in 2 years. We needed a Marshall Plan for the Gulf South. We needed a great presidential leadership. I mean, Theodore Roosevelt saved 230 million acres for conservation as president and built the Panama Canal. FDR to get us out of the Depression, created New Deal programs one after the other. Eisenhower in the Cold War built the interstate highway system so we could evacuate our centers in case of a Soviet nuclear attack. Our country has a tradition of doing big, bold things well. The Bush administration has not truly addressed the main problem, which is the need to build Category 5 levies that are sustainable. It's because the price ticket is about $45 billion, could be more, and it wouldn't be ready till about 2015. They've made this decision not to go that route, instead to do a kind of patchwork job on the levees. And the Army Corps of Engineers is working hard. They are getting things done. They do have what they call a 100-year protection plan underway. But that's just trying to make these levees safe for Category 3 storms.
Let's get callers involved in the conversation. Our guest again is Douglas Brinkley, a history professor at Rice University. His op-ed was called Reckless Abandonment. It was in the Washington Post. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Cameron's on the line with us from McMinnville in Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As your guest said, the government is only doing patchwork on levees right now, and with such problems as global warming, rising of the ocean, and hurricanes becoming more and more powerful as the years go on, it's just going to happen all over again. If the levees aren't improved to the point where they could deal with some of the strongest hurricanes that we've ever seen, all that's going to happen is the levees are going to break, and it's going to flood again, and more people will die, and more of the taxpayer dollars will be spent. So on a cost-benefit analysis, is it really worth us to save the city?
Back to cost-benefit analysis again. One of the things you do point out in your op-ed, Douglas Brinkley, is some of the thinking of Cameron's is fair enough, but you should say it out loud.
That's correct. I do think what the caller is saying is a policy alternative, which is let's abandon these below-sea-level neighborhoods and move to Shreveport or Baton Rouge in Jackson. I am not for that solution because I think a great country has to fight for its great cities. New Orleans is not just a city. It's one that's steeped in history, and it's not just jazz or Tennessee Williams and Truman Capote, but it was where we fought for the Battle of New Orleans and the War of 1812. It's where the Louisiana Purchase Transfer was took place. It is our great ambassador city to the world. If we're going to abandon New Orleans because of global warming, does that mean we're going to abandon Miami and then because of an earthquake we'll abandon Los Angeles and San Francisco and everybody should move to Kansas and get away from the water's edge? The answer is no. We do what they did in Europe. Just go to the Netherlands and watch how the Dutch saved Den Haag and Amsterdam and Rotterdam from the sea, or the way the Italians have been able to preserve Venice. We have the technology to save New Orleans. We have the financial resources to do it. We're just lacking leadership. We need somebody to make this the public works project of a generation, the way that Kennedy made the Apollo space program a national objective during the 60s.
Hmm. Cameron, thanks for the thought.
Thank you.
And one of the things you also say is that New Orleans has some other problems, including its politicians.
Well, you just don't want to sit and blame everything on the federal government, although they're the ones who built the faulty levees, which created this problem to start with, yet they're reluctant to fix it, the problem they created. But New Orleans and Louisiana in general has, as we all know, a deep culture of political corruption. Just that, look what's happened from the first anniversary to the second. I mean, Congressman Bill Jefferson being indicted by the FBI on numerous accounts. We had City Councilman Oliver Thomas a couple weeks ago admit that he was being bribed and he resigned. Our Senator David Vitter has been involved in this prostitution ring scandal and is a very deeply damaged senator, barely hanging on. One can go on and on. I mean, our great governor in recent years, Edwin Edwards, has experienced Katrina from prison. So we have deep political corruption. It's not helping the situation because while the Bush administration has a policy of inaction, a lot of Americans are willing to kind of go on with along with that because they say, you know, they don't know what they're doing. Why dump money in Louisiana? It's all going to get stolen or misappropriated. So the sympathy that should be coming to the people of New Orleans and the Louisiana boot heel just isn't there because the news rightfully keeps pointing out, you know, Ray Nagin saying some buffoonish statement or this politician's getting arrested. And it disheartens the American public. And there are a lot of other problems problems our nation's facing. So New Orleans kind of gets backburnered, and people are saying, get your own house in order first, and then maybe we'll help.
Hmm. This is Justin. Justin's with us from Augusta in Georgia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would agree with the previous comment in that, you know, there's many places in the United States that are just like New Orleans. Isn't Washington, D.C., built mostly on a bog? I mean, why shouldn't we save this great city and help to rebuild it and increase the levees? I mean, it has huge historical value, and the people there deserve better, and I don't see how that anyone in New Orleans could even stand and take a picture with President Bush.
Whatever it takes, Justin?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, we at least need to do something. I mean, come on.
You know, one of the things that I think would be important right now on the second anniversary is we need a national push to have one of the presidential debates held in New Orleans. There is a commission on presidential debates. They're thinking about it. They're going to decide by this October. I'm afraid once those media trucks pull away tomorrow out of New Orleans, you know, the city's going to be forgotten about for a good other year, and it probably won't be able to get much attention next August due to the presidential election. So we need to have a debate there. And the candidates, Democrat and Republican, whoever the nominees are, and perhaps an independent candidate, they all need to say what their vision is for the great city of New Orleans and for the Gulf South. They need to get on the record of what they would do as president. And so one thing listeners can do is to really write letters and lobby the Commission on Presidential Debates to make sure one of those three are held in New Orleans so we could make some hard decisions. We still haven't even decided whether FEMA should remain part of Homeland Security or should it be a cabinet-level office. A lot of the problems of Katrina were just sweeping under the rug and pretending like we don't want to hear it anymore because fatigue set in after a couple months and people now kind of tune out. There's only so many hard luck FEMA trailer stories about how Bob Jones got screwed over that people can endure. So instead of micro-studying what's going on in New Orleans, people kind of tune it out. Mm. And I think holding a debate would be a very affirmative way of at least keeping this situation in the news. You know, the Dust Bowl of the 1930s didn't just happen overnight. It wasn't a day. It wasn't a year. When we lecture like I do here at Rice University on history, we talk about the Dust Bowl of being about 8 or 9 years. Katrina is going on right now. A generation is going to decide the future of New Orleans in the next 3 or 4 years, and let's have a national debate about it, make some big decisions, and let's at all costs be honest to the victims of the storm about what the reality is of their being able to come home and the people living in New Orleans being able to have secure levees. Let's talk really boldly and truthfully to the people.
Our guest, Douglas Brinkley, a history professor at Rice University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with John. John's with us from Eden, North Carolina.
Hello?
Hi, John. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to provide perhaps a slightly different perspective on how things have unfolded in New Orleans. First of all, you know, it's amazing to me how quickly and easily people want to trash George W. over everything that happens in a bad way in this country. The government has provided, as stated on your show earlier, billions, with a B, of dollars of funds to assist in the problems with New Orleans. And if the fact that those funds have not found their way to places where they need to be is not George W.'s problem. It's the locals. You just went through a long list of just how corrupt the organizations, the politicians are in that community. I had an occasion to visit New Orleans about 15 years ago while I interviewed with Hibernian National Bank there. And in 48 hours, I was mugged and had my hotel room broken into. So the kind of crime that you're talking about that's rampant in New Orleans today has been rampant in New Orleans for years. When people choose to live 8 feet below sea level, they really don't need to have a whole lot of support from the outside world. You know, find a place above the waterline to live,
John,
or build your city someplace else.
John, I hear your point. I just wanted to give Doug Brinkley a chance to respond.
Excuse me?
I just wanted to give Doug Brinkley a chance to respond. Go ahead, please, Doug.
Well, obviously, I disagree that one just abandons cities that are below sea level. I gave the example of in the Netherlands of the busiest hub airport in Europe is the Amsterdam airport, which is 20 feet below sea level. New Orleans has been a great port city for a long time. 65% of all of our nation's import and exports of grain go through the port of New Orleans. This is a major national security economic spot on the map. It also, with all the problems, when callers pointing out the crime in particular, which is true, but it's one of those cities that the world loves. One of the great exports from the United States culturally has been jazz. And many of these communities like the Lower Ninth are historic communities. They deserve a chance to come back because the federal government, and I'm not saying President Bush, the federal government, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, built the bogus levees. So to say that the federal government can build horrific infrastructure that's lethal on people's lives, and then when the disaster happens, say, hey, we're not really responsible. Why were you guys living there? I think that's a shell game argument, and it's one that's putting a burden on victims of faulty engineering by the U.S. government.
Well, I'd be willing to bet if you're listening to me.
John, we are listening to you, but I'm afraid we're out of time, so we're just going to have to leave it there. All right. I appreciate the phone call, though.
No problem.
Thanks very much. And Doug Brinkley, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Doug Brinkley, a history professor at Rice University, author of The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. He joined us today from the studios of the Baker Institute at Rice University in Houston, Texas. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.